Welcome to Copper Country Today. We are heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on AM 1400 and FM 99.3 WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBAR 102.3. Our program is brought to you by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic and by the members of the Copper Country Education Association. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at QNRReport.com. In the second part of this morning's program, I'll be talking with Bill Fink. We're going to spend a little time discussing mental illness in the Copper Country and some of the support structure that is in place for caregivers, those people who take care of those who suffer from mental illness. My guest in the first section is Lon Johnson. Lon is the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. Welcome back. You were here a year or so ago.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you back. This interview being recorded on Wednesday afternoon, just for the record. The election has come and gone.
Yep.
You are the minority party in Lansing and by a little bit more than you were before.
That's right. You know, we're not here to sugarcoat this. We lost. Michigan got caught up in that national Republican wave that happened also nationally. We've got to do a better job of explaining to voters who we are and what we're about, and come up with policies and ideas that that attract votes. I don't believe we did that well enough.
I was struck by a lot of the post-mortem look back at the election after the votes were counted, and so much of it seemed to focus on logistical things. I heard people saying, well, we didn't get the voters in this area out the way we should, and we didn't get the voters in this demographic out the way that we should. And when did all of this start to focus on logistics instead of ideas?
I couldn't agree more. You know, we've got to do a better job. Look, we can do all the mechanics you want. You can knock all the doors you want. You can make all the phone calls you want, send out all the absentee applications that you want. But until you get the voters between the ears, you're going nowhere. Politics is an idea business. It's a means by which policy gets implemented. And we've got to go out there and sell, you know, and sell and do a better job of ideas. You know, we've got to go out there and show how we are going to create a state where people can stay in Michigan and succeed. And, you know, when a business is failing, they don't yell at the customers, you know, the voters. We've got to do a better job of offering better products and products that we can show them that there's real benefit to their lives. And that's what we're doing here over the next 6 weeks, is understanding from people what they want to hear and see from their government. And we're going to then work to see how we can get those things implemented.
Is it what we want to see or hear from our government? Because I know what I'd like to hear. I'd like to hear that gasoline is going to continue to go down to about 50 cents a gallon, and my taxes are going to be cut in half, and I'd love to hear that stuff.
But well, obviously, how do you get it done?
But obviously, that's pie in the sky. That's not going to be happening. But, you know, at some point, and I know it's a challenge for you guys in the political business, at some point you have to tell us what we have to hear.
Of course.
There isn't enough money to do thing A, B, C, and D.
That's right. There's, you know, government is has limited resources, your tax dollars, your money. The question is, how will those tax dollars be used to benefit you? Now, we believed at the Democratic Party that to create a state where people in Michigan can stay and succeed, we have to invest in and protect our greatest assets, our people, our land, and our Great Lakes. I'll give you a prime example. In Michigan here, this governor created a $1.4 billion tax break for corporations in the hopes that it would create jobs, that money would spur greater economic development. It hasn't worked. That's our money. That's $1.4 billion. I think that people would be, you know, that people would be willing to sacrifice if they saw a gain. And it just didn't appear. You know, those jobs just didn't show up. The jobs that we have, have increased, have become, largely been due to the resurgence of the auto industry. But we've got to create a state where everyone can succeed. That $1.4 billion in tax breaks for corporations, that money didn't come to the UP. That didn't come to Northern Michigan. It's gone. It's in New York. It's in Chicago. It's in the Cayman Islands. It's everywhere but here. And the worst part about that is that we paid for that. We took $1 billion out of education. We started taxing pensions, and we cut tax breaks that would go to middle-class families. And, you know, that's just, we took $1.4 billion of our money and we just threw it into the wind. We've got to do a better job of showing the people of Michigan precisely what they get for their money, whether it's education, protection of Great Lakes, or better economic systems so that they can have jobs and stay here. Now, I'll give you an example of ideas, the idea business, that we've got to go in. You know, Governor Soapy Williams brought the bridge, right? That was a big idea. It was something that the voters of the UP saw immediate tangible benefits, and it was something that could be achieved. And he went out there and he got it done. You know, the Democratic Party has always been the party that has gone out there and developed big legislation to get big things done. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the Clean Air Act, the Disabilities Act, the ACA, you know, Obamacare, if you will. We've gone out there and created real change for people's lives, and we demonstrated them, if you vote for us, this is what you will get, and we've got to get back into that business.
There are those who say that one of the problems the Democratic Party experienced in the last election was that there are some people who don't like the Affordable Care Act. Do you perceive it as being a problem, and should there be adjustments made to it?
Well, I think just like, you know, look, healthcare, the healthcare industry is a massive sector of our economy. And any time you seek to improve it or to reform it, there's going to be problems. There's never, you know, a clear solution. You know, one, never a magic bullet that goes out there and solves an industry that has real problems, the size of the healthcare industry. But what we are hearing is fix it, but don't get rid of it. And the Republicans have fixated on trying to eliminate it. It survived the Supreme Court, it survived the House, it survived the Senate, and it's passed into law. Now, and it has helped millions of people get better health care at a more affordable rate, and they're not being thrown off because of, you know, pre-existing conditions, nor are they being let go once they do get ill. We are proud of the health care, the ACA, Affordable Care Act, and we're going to lean into that. That is, this is not something we're going to retreat from.
And yet, at least here in Michigan, a lot of the private insurance rates took huge bumps this year.
Well, I think there's a lot of what, you know, there was a more, you know, I don't want to get too into the weeds here, but there was a period there where healthcare companies could increase their rates because in the future they couldn't. So that's a lot of what happened. A lot of the insurance companies raised their rates right now because in the future they couldn't.
Okay, so we're hoping
and
that
then the Republicans will go on and say, look at the insurance, your insurance is going up. Right? There was a moratorium there where the insurance companies could increase their rates, where in the future they won't be able to, so they quickly took advantage of that.
Okay, so maybe next year we hope for not so much rate increase.
Well, you know, I'll use my father as a prime example. He's not exactly a Democrat, my father.
Okay.
And my father sent me an email, was, you know, like most people, very skeptical of Obamacare or ACA, very skeptical of it. And then about a year in, he went and got health insurance, and his premium went from, I think, $970 a month for him and his wife down to $340. And then a year after that, about 6 months after that, my stepmother was diagnosed with cancer. Not only did she not get dropped, but her coverage was better. That's the notion of insurance, is by, you know, you've got to go out and spread risk so that it can be affordable for everyone. You know, what you've got with many of these insurers is they're seeking to go out and insure the 25-year-old guy, right, who's never going to get sick. And the minute he hits 45 and develops maybe a blood pressure problem or some sort of condition, heart condition of some sort, he gets dropped. And, you know, we've got to, you know, healthcare is a right. We are the best nation on earth, and we have a responsibility to make sure that people, when they get sick, can be covered and be treated.
My guest is Lon Johnson. He is the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. So you're a minority in Lansing. As a minority party, how do you act and how do you influence legislation that's coming through? Because given the majorities that the Republicans have in both the House and the Senate and the Republican governor, they can pass pretty much anything they want.
Well, they clearly cannot. They didn't get these roads done. You know, this Republican governor has now, you know, majorities in the House and the Senate, and he still can't get this roads built done. In fact, what does he want to do to fix our roads? Raise our taxes again.
Yeah, and let me stop you right now, because that's a point further down my list here. Mm-hmm. The proposal is out. We would raise the sales tax by 1 point and suddenly have money for roads. Is that something that the Democratic Party supports?
Well, we're going to meet in February and collectively take a position on that. But I can tell you I'm highly skeptical that this will pass, or it should pass. You know, this governor found the political will to give $1.4 billion in tax breaks to corporations, but then somehow becomes a political neophyte when he can't get $1.4 billion to fix our roads. That's precisely, it's not coincidence here that this road bill raises about $1.4 billion in taxes to fix our roads, when 3 years ago, they had no problem finding $1.4 billion to take care of the wealthy and the well-connected in these corporations.
Yeah, but if I recall, when he took the $1.4 billion out, the scream at that point was, no, we've got to keep it in the schools.
Yeah, he took $1.4 billion in tax money, and he had to raise that revenue. So what he did, instead of raising taxes, what he did was, well, he did raise it. He took $1 billion out of education, started taxing pensions, and eliminated tax breaks for middle-class families. That's what he got it paid for.
So, but if in fact he had left all those things alone, mm-hmm. then that $1.4 billion would not have been there for roads. We can't use the $1.4 billion twice.
No, we cannot.
So if we could, if you could write it at this point without a tax increase, where else do you come up with the $1.4 billion for the roads?
Well, there's a number of solutions that were being proposed prior to going into the ballot initiative, and this governor couldn't get it done. Look, there's a lot of ways to go about getting this done, without raising taxes on middle-class families. You know, we gave $1.4 billion in tax breaks to corporations, and they didn't produce jobs. Maybe we should revisit that.
Yeah, of course, you know, the tax breaks helped me.
Did you hire anybody?
I think I have money invested in some of those companies.
Did you hire anyone because you received a tax break?
I probably at some point.
The answer, if you don't have an answer, yes or no, whether or not you hired anybody.
No, I did not hire anybody. But at some point in my retirement, mm-hmm. I will spend a little bit more money, perhaps.
The bottom line is $1.4 billion is not in UP. It's gone. It's in the Caymans. It's in New York at the stock market. It's in Chicago. It's not here.
And a little tiny bit of it is in my IRA.
Well, that's terrific. Good for you.
Yeah. And I, one of the things that I'll confess bothers me. Mm-hmm. is that I think that we as a society have invented two entities that we have decided to pretend have resources.
Okay.
One is government. Government has no resources.
It's from us.
Government is a pipeline.
It's from us. That's correct. Those resources, that's our government, that's our money.
Yeah. The second is business. Business is the same as government. It is a pipeline. Mm-hmm. Money goes in, money comes back out.
That's correct. It's either invested or through the sale of their goods.
So if you tax government, or if you tax business, are you not in fact taxing everybody who owns a piece of each business?
Well, of course you are. You know, look, but those businesses gain benefit from government services.
But you see, I own a piece of business. Mm-hmm. All sorts of people, you know, union pension funds mm-hmm. own a piece of business.
Everybody isn't, has, you know, anybody who invests in the stock market or even, you know, invests in any way, shape, or form owns a piece of the business.
Isn't raising a tax on business, in effect, raising a tax on a union pension fund?
I'm not raising taxes on business. But this governor said if we give business a $1.4 billion tax break, they will create jobs. And it didn't happen. It didn't happen.
Now, the governor would say our employment figure is significantly better.
That's the auto industry. Let's get real. That's the resurgence of the auto industry, and that was done by this government's rescuing of that industry when it needed it.
We had one business that moved in here because of it.
Because of the tax break?
Yes.
Which one?
Yes.
They moved here because of the favorable tax treatment.
They moved here because of several reasons, but they did not cross us off the list as they would have before the tax break was passed, because we now were competitive with other states, with other states in the region.
Look, it's a question of priorities. In a perfect world, nobody would pay taxes, right? In a perfect world, we wouldn't have to pay for anything.
No, that's not a perfect world. That's baloney. Stop that.
I'm taking your argument here to the conclusion. Have to raise money so that we can educate our children, keep our roads safe. Keep our roads open and our communities safe through law enforcement and so forth. Look, we have to have priorities here. To do that takes funds. And those funds, when you take $1 billion out of public education, $1 billion out of public education, we're going to suffer as a community. And that's precisely what's happened. It's a question of priorities. To give $1 billion over to, $1.4 billion to corporations, meanwhile have it paid for by cutting education and taxing seniors, that's just wrong.
I am playing devil's advocate a little bit here with Lon Johnson, the chairman of the Michigan Democratic Party. Define for me, because this was one of the big things that came up in the election. The Democrats said Governor Snyder stole $1 billion from the schools. Mm-hmm. Governor Snyder said, wait a minute, no.
We got him on tape
amount of money that went to schools went up.
It's just wrong.
Well, he says you're wrong.
We have him on tape 3 times saying he cut education. I don't know what more you need.
Where did the money that he says he put in, where did it go? Or did it not exist? Is he lying?
I'm not going to go into finger pointing. That was last year's election. But $1 billion was cut out of education. There was $1 billion less. Cost per pupil has gone down. I don't have the exact figure in front of me, but I believe it was... cost per pupil has gone down. You know what? These are all accountants' arguments. Why don't you ask any parent? Is their classroom more crowded? Do they have to pay now for extracurricular activities? Right? Are there teachers being laid off in their school? Go ask a teacher. Go ask a parent. They'll tell you. Forget watching these TV commercials. Ask anybody with a kid in grade school.
President Obama just announced a proposal to provide free community college. As long as we're on the education topic here. He, as politicians tend to be with these things on both sides of the aisle, was a little vague about how it was going to be paid for. Is that something that could work in Michigan? Has the Democratic Party taken a look at this?
We're taking a look now, but let's get back to the premise of what he was doing. Look, we invest. Okay, let's take your tax break for an example. If we have a pile of money, you can invest in business. And you can invest in people. Clearly, people are saying that it was a good idea to invest in business, give $1.4 billion back to the businesses, and that by that investment, that will spur jobs. Well, look, we believe as Democrats that you should equally invest into people. Now, we started this country back in 1776 with the notion that education should be free. Right?
It was not the case.
It came in the 1800s.
It was the Kalamazoo school case.
That's right.
In the late 1800s.
Kalamazoo, in fact, Michigan was one of the first to say education should be free. It was a radical notion at the time.
It was.
Radical. I mean, Europe was looking at us like, what? What are you doing over here? You're giving making education free. And it spread throughout our country, and education was free. Kindergarten through 12th grade. Now, what we're attempting to do is to take the next two. That's not enough. I think everyone in this country recognizes no longer is a high school degree sufficient for us to be competitive in the world economy. And so all this president is doing is saying, two more years should be free as well. To be competitive in a worldwide economy, 2 more years would probably be a good idea. That's all that's going on here.
There was a proposal that the Democrats floated, as I recall, a couple of years ago to go for 4 years.
Well, you know, there's
in
4 years. Look, again, it's big ideas versus what's achievable, right? And 2 years, I don't believe is going to bankrupt our country. It's a good idea. It will put us in a more competitive advantage. You know, it's no different from, you know, look at anybody. When we give somebody a Pell Grant and a student loan and help subsidize that student loan, the government gets its money back tenfold and increased taxes that individual pays because they have a higher income because of the education that they receive, not to mention all the good things that they go on to do in their career and make our country a stronger place. It's an investment. Look, we invest in people. We need to invest in people as much as we invest in corporations. That's all this. It's all the Democrats are talking about here, investing in people.
I found it interesting. I read an article shortly after the president's proposal came out that indicated that the average college freshman now reads at a seventh grade level. Would we be better taking that money and beefing up our high schools so that the kids who are coming out of high school may have the education that they're...
So you sound like a Democrat. I mean, if we had $1 billion,
I don't sound one way or the other.
I don't know that advocate. I believe some story that I find on Facebook about a seventh grade reading level. I don't know about that.
It's been pretty well documented, and I work with college freshmen.
Look, we always got to do a better job of educating
them. That they come in and they're not ready for college. Are we better served extending the educational experience, or would we be better served intensifying the educational experience?
It's not an either or; it's both. We're never worse off by a better educated populace.
So, what do we have to do on that end of it? You know, how do we make sure?
Well, I can tell you one thing: you don't take $1 billion out of classroom budgets. Look, as Democrats, we recognize it's not all about money in the college. I'm sorry, into education. Teacher quality matters, right?
Yeah.
Curriculum matters. The education, the overall social experience that student has matters. And when you take $1 billion out of there, what's happening in our schools? You know, you're taking a 45, 55-year-old teacher who's qualified and has now built up tenure and has built up salary, greater benefits, and we're letting those teachers go, and we're hiring 23, 24-year-olds right out of college because they're cheaper. And that, again, no offense to 23 and 24-year-old teachers. Thank God for them, and thank God they're dedicating their life to educate our children.
Or at least the first two-thirds of it, because at some point they're going to be the 45- or 50-year-old teacher is going to be laid off.
But it does come down to, too often, you know, it does come down to finances for some of these local school districts.
Well, we
can hire two 23-year-old teachers, or we can keep that teacher that's 50, 55 years old.
Yeah.
And that's a tough choice for these school districts, and it shouldn't have to be that way. When you take $1 billion out of education, those are the choices that our local school boards are being forced to make right now.
Yeah, and our schools here struggle doubly because many of our school districts are losing numbers.
Yes.
So they have, even apples to apples.
They have overhead that doesn't change regardless of their student population.
Yeah. You know, they have less money this year than they had last year because the student population went down. People are moving away from the area. Our population is going down. And they're chasing this downward spiral. Is there something that can be done?
Well, you know, there's a lot of various solutions out there, and that's what we're, over the next 6 weeks, the Democratic Party are going to take a hard look at how do we create a state where people can stay and succeed. That's the question at every single table in the state of Michigan. How do we stay in Michigan and succeed? We're seeing too many of our kids and our grandkids move to Chicago or to New York or to San Francisco or D.C. or somewhere else because it's a thriving, it's a thriving economy. And they have more opportunity there. The question for us is how do we create a state where we can stay and succeed? Our talent is leaving. They're leaving Michigan in droves. We feel that there's five areas that we need to focus on and offer up bold policy solutions. Those five areas are education, economy, natural resources, infrastructure, and how we relate to our local governments. So we're going to go in the next 6 weeks and develop bold policy initiatives in those five categories and offer them up to the voters of Michigan. No longer, you know, can we just be the party of against Snyder, against the Republicans. We've got to offer up real answers.
I will look forward to hearing the results, and that's going to run us out of time here. Lon Johnson, the chairman of the Michigan Democratic Party, thank you for being my guest this morning.
Thank you.
And stay tuned, because we have a second half of the program coming up. I'll be talking with Bill Fink about some of the options that are being made available to help those who support those with mental illness here in the Copper Country. Our program brought to you by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic and by the members of the Copper Country Education Association.